Greetings, listeners. We're back once again to talk to you about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits like the dreamlands, or things of a weird nature, or things that are Lovecraftian leaning. Weird fiction, science fiction, horror, learn of terrible meetings in lonely places, of cyclopean ruins and vast staircases that lead down to abysses of nighted secrets, of complex angles that lead through invisible walls to other regions of space and time, and of hideous explorations in remote and forbidden places, on other worlds, and in different time-space continua. From the creation of our galaxy to the death of the sun, this is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos from the perspective of humans' concept of history. We are the people's guide to the Cthulhu mythos. You can find us at pgttcm.com, pgttcm.podbean.com, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The people's guide to the Cthulhu mythos starts now.
The People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
801.
Season 8.
Outside the ordered universe is that amorphous blight of nethermost confusion which blasphemes and bubbles at the center of all infinity, the boundless demon Sultan Azathoth, whose name no lips dare speak aloud, and who gnaws hungrily at the inconceivable, unlighted chambers beyond time and space, amidst the muffled, maddening beatening of vile drums and thin, monotonous whine of accursed flutes.
Series 8, Episode 1, Azathoth. Written and edited by Daniel Spitzer. Audio by Sarah Fee and Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Help the show by sharing, rating, liking, or 5-star giving where you listen to or rate podcasts. Support the show by hitting the patron button on pgttcm.podbean.com or by going to paypal.me/pgttcm. Buy a cool shirt from pgttcm.threadless.com. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Learn more at darkmyths.org and don't forget to visit pgttcm.com. Today's topic is Azathoth, a deity created by H.P. Lovecraft. Ever hear of the guy? Welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
Hey, Sarah, we are back.
Good to be back.
It is good to be back.
It feels like we haven't recorded in months.
I know. And yeah, we are recording right now, and this is going to be coming out first week of October.
Oh, right Chris in time. Fall leaves. H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival in CthulhuCon.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to be there. You're going to be there.
Yeah, it's tiki themed this year.
Ooh, good thing I have all kinds of awesome shirts from my Ken Hite collection.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you going to cosplay as him again?
I think everyone's going to be cosplaying as Ken Hite this year.
Not me, because I'm wearing a skirt.
Okay, all right. Hey, I don't know about Ken Hite's personal life, so.
It's a good point. It's a good point. Never know what he's doing when he's not in Portland.
Heightening it up in Chicago. But yeah, no, we're going to be talking about Azathoth. But before we get into that, no, it's good to be back. It's good to be recording. It's good to have all the recording equipment out.
Yeah.
And it's random array.
I feel like we haven't been in the recording studio in forever.
Oh, yeah. No. I have.
It's dusty in here.
I've been recording stuff for Mark Slade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Check out Mark Slade's The Weirdness and a bunch of other stuff. It's weird fiction at its weirdest. And also, he's got some good smutty stuff out there, too. Mm. Mark Slade.
I'll check him out.
I think this is for an upcoming project that I don't know if I can talk about it yet or not. I don't even know if I was supposed to talk about Mark Slade, but hey, I did.
Just go beep and edit it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, I do some voices. I do a dark, stonery voice guy. He says mean, shitty things to people.
Yeah. Oh,
That's cool.
Sounds fun.
And then I do a nerd guy who wants more candy than he's allotted on Halloween.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
It's like the two sides of you.
The two sides of me. Anyway, have you been up to anything fun and exciting?
I canned a bunch of applesauce.
Canned a bunch of applesauce.
Yes, so we're all good for applesauce this year, probably.
Cool.
Until I start making fruit roll-ups. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah. So we're going to be going to CthulhuCon.
Yes. Yes, we are. I'm excited to watch you create some art.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to be at Pikmin's Apprentice. Look for DB Spitzer.
Yay.
Yep. I'm also going to have a ad in the Daily Lurker.
Woohoo.
And also...
Oh, and also, aren't you going to be doing a recitation as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm also going to be doing a live show of PGTTCM during the poetry reading. I don't know if they know that I'm doing that, but that's what I'm doing.
Oh, is that the deal?
I've got 20 minutes to do whatever I want for the poetry thing, oh, so man. I'm going to do a mini episode.
Just by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's a that's why it's a mini episode.
Right, right.
Because it's only one of us.
Right. Because you need both of us to make it full size.
Exactly.
I'm going to be sporting our shirts.
Ooh.
Yes.
You mean our shirts from pggttcm.threadless.com?
That's correct. Cool. And a new sweatshirt, which is from Society 6.
Ooh, the Society 6, which is on the pggttcm.com. link to the anyway,
it's on the
on the
website.
You heard the ads already.
I was really surprised at how easy it was to buy these t-shirts, and like the ones on Threadless especially come in like many different colors.
Oh yeah.
So our not the latest but the logo, but the one before with the skull with the five tentacles, we always show that on a field of red, but I actually got it on a field of aqua, and I'm really excited to wear it because I think it's going to look really nice.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to be doing that. There's going to be some cool stuff. There's some cool guests. Check that out by checking out HPLFF. Oh, man. I don't even remember. Look up the HP Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland.
Yeah. It's like the first result or the second result right now.
And it's going to be at the Hollywood Theater. And hey, we went to the Hollywood Theater about 2 weeks ago?
Yes, we saw this amazing like collection.
Future Shock with Orson Welles.
Oh my gosh. It was not as shocking as you might think.
There, at some point in time. Yeah, yeah, it's like everything that he's predicting, it's supposed to be this like shock film.
Oh, and
there's going to be men and men living together.
The group marriage was the one that was supposed to be the most shocking.
Yeah,
and then
there
was like the communes.
Yeah.
And then, which they like have this really this shot of them eating dinner at the table in a commune at a really impractical cross-shaped table, which I'm like, I'm just stuck on it still. I'm like, this is, you can't have people backing into each other when they get out of it's just no. No, what you need is you need like two parallel tables.
Wow.
Yeah, I've thought about it.
Wow. Okay.
and then the other thing they had. They had the like very traditional wedding scene, but it was shock, two men getting married. And I was like, this is dated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. No, in the outfits and stuff, I was like, oh, man, no one would ever get married in that. I don't care who you are.
Oh, yeah. No, they were shiny brocade suit like tuxedo jackets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, what hung on to me with that, and there was that, there was...
Oh, there was the packaged food one.
There was the packaged food one about how bad packaged food is for you.
Yes, that was
good
too.
Yeah.
And then the glug.
The glug, the Canadian after-school special involving...
Preteen
drinking.
Alcoholism.
Oh, man.
And it was like, the message wasn't don't drink. The message was don't drink so much.
Yeah.
It was, like, it was hilarious.
Yeah. If you've got a problem with alcohol like your older sister, you should probably, cool it.
Yeah. Like, don't drink so much that you're, like, falling down and hitting things.
Yeah. But yeah, no. What really stuck with me was all the packaging. All graphic designer. So I'm, like, excited about, like... Look at all the packaging. Look at the typefaces. Look
right?
at the color
well,
combinations.
Especially in the... Yeah, right? It was...
We'd like to thank you for listening to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, our sponsor. is BunnySlippers.com, your finest source of wonderful Cthulhu slippers and cool, cool shirts from FoundItemClothing.com, your favorite shirts from your favorite cult films, and also these fine folks.
That's it was cool. It was cool. It was at the Hollywood Theater, and
They apparently do it once a month where they invite people with eight and 16 millimeter film collections to come in and show some of their collection.
And I think it is somehow related to the video store. I don't know if it still functions as a video store, if it's just like a museum
Movie Madness?
Now. Mike's Movie Madness on
I
Belmont.
Miss Movie Madness.
Portland
Talk, physical location isn't there anymore.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's sad.
No, now it's Happy Cakes.
Okay. Because they had like the knife from Scream, they had the knife from Psycho, they had a mugwump from The Naked Lunch, they had Orson Welles' suit from A Touch of Evil.
Oh, yeah.
They had, like, dresses from Gone with the Wind.
Like experiential level.
Yeah.
It was like you walked in and it was a room that was kind of like the size of a regular video store.
Yeah.
And then you walk through that door in the back that in most video stores leads to the porn section.
Exactly.
And instead it's like a giant
long
series
international
of,
film hallway.
Yeah, and then there was like interlocking rooms of like you walk through one and you go into another and then you go into another and then there's this big room in the back. It was just like, how many movies do you want to watch in your life?
How many movie stores do you know have an H.P. Lovecraft section?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, and of course, when I went there, it was long enough ago that this was way before Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just the idea, like, that I wasn't, like, they had a room that was science fiction films.
Yep. Oh, they had a huge room. And then the categories for science fiction were weird.
Yeah.
Like, Yahweh is angry. Prehistoric monsters strike back. female troubles. And then they had a section, which this kind of stuff that we saw comes from Psychotronic.
Oh, really?
So it's like the weird, bizarre, cheaply made films, educational stuff. But there was stuff that I used to love when I was in, like, my teens and 20s, where people would take this educational stuff and edit it together to make, like, some sort of, like, psychedelic freak-out kind of, like, anti-establishment, like, combining educational films, pornography, and, like, military training videos to create this, like, cacophony of, like, light and sound that just, I don't know, just
sort of took you on a ride.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Speaking of light and sound and a cacophony.
Oh, should we talk about Yggdrasil?
Let's talk about Azathoth.
Azathoth, I mean. You know, the first recorded mention of Azathoth was in a note Lovecraft wrote to himself in 1919 that read simply, Azathoth, hideous name. Another note Lovecraft made to himself later in 1919 refers to an idea for a story, a terrible pilgrimage to seek the knighted throne of the far-off demon sultan, Azathoth. In a letter to Frank Belknap Long, Lovecraft ties this plot germ to Vathek, a novel by William Beckford about a supernatural caliph. Lovecraft's attempts to work this idea into a novel floundered, a 500-word fragment survives, first published under the title Azathoth in the journal Leaves in 1938. Although Lovecraftian scholar Will Murray suggests that Lovecraft recycled the idea into his Dream Cycle novella, The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, written in 1926. Lovecraft refers to Azathoth again in The Whisper in Darkness, 1931, where the narrator relates that he started with loathing when told of the monstrous nuclear chaos beyond angled space, which the Necronomicon had mercifully cloaked under the name of Azathoth. Here, nuclear most likely refers to Azathoth's central location at the nucleus of the cosmos and not to nuclear energy, which did not truly come of age until after Lovecraft's death. Can you pause it for a sec? Okay, now maybe I'll trip a little less. Okay. All right. In The Dreams in the Witch House, 1932, the protagonist William Gilman dreams that he is told by the witch Keziah Mason that he must meet the black man and go with them all to the throne of Azathoth at the center of ultimate chaos. He must sign in his own blood, the Book of Azathoth, and take a new secret name. What kept him from going with her to the throne of chaos, where the thin flutes pipe mindlessly, was the fact that he had seen the name Azathoth in the Necronomicon and knew it stood for a primal horror too horrible for description. Gilman wakes from another dream remembering the thin, monotonous piping of an unseen flute and decides that he had picked up the last conception from what he had read in the Necronomicon about the mindless entity Azathoth, which rules all time and space from a curiously environed black throne at the center of chaos. He later fears finding himself in the spiral black vortices of that ultimate void of chaos wherein reigns the mindless demon sultan Azathoth. The poet Edward Pickman Derby, the protagonist of Lovecraft's The Thing on the Doorstep, is a poet whose collection of nightmare lyrics is called Azathoth and Other Horrors. The last major reference in Lovecraft's fiction to Azathoth was in 1935, The Haunter of the Dark, which tells of the ancient legends of ultimate chaos at whose center spirals the blind idiot god Azathoth, lord of all things, encircled by his flopping horde of mindless and amorphous dancers, lulled by the thin, monotonous piping of a demonic flute held in nameless paws. In a letter to a friend who jokingly claimed descent from Jupiter, Lovecraft drew up a detailed genealogy charting his and fellow novelist Clark Ashton Smith's shared descent from Azathoth. Through Lovecraft's creation, Nyarlathotep, and Clark Ashton Smith's Sathagwa, respectively. As nowhere stated in Lovecraft's published work, primordial Azathoth here is made ancestor through his children Nyarlathotep, the Nameless Mist, and Darkness, of Yog-Sothoth, Shub-Niggurath, Nug, and Yeb, Cthulhu, Sathagwa, several deities and monsters unmentioned outside the letter, and a few of Lovecraft and Ashton Smith's fancifully posited human forebearers. Many other writers have mentioned Azathoth, including Ramsey Campbell, Peter Cannon, Lynn Carter, Agiedag Derleth, John Glasby, Henry Kuttner, Thomas Ligotti, Robert M. Price, and more. Azathoth, according to Dan Harm's Cthulhu Mythos Encyclopedia, is an outer god also known as the Primal Chaos and the Demon Sultan. Azathoth normally is a shapeless, chaotic mass, but has been known to take on other forms when he has been summoned. Azathoth sits in his court at the center of the ultimate chaos. Others say the center of the universe, or even caverns beneath the earth, mindlessly bubbling and blaspheming as he presides over the dance of other gods. A veil of colors seals off the rest of the universe from the court of Azathoth, where conventional laws of space and time break down. Legend has it that Azathoth gave birth to the universe and will destroy it in the end. Some modern thinkers have equated Azathoth with the Big Bang. This corresponds with the Greek and Norse creation myths, which hold that the universe was created out of primal chaos. Okay, some scholars have drawn parallels between Azathoth and the Gnostic Achamoth, the monster of the Demiurge, who created the universe, or the Egyptian cult of Aten, the sun disk. Overall, however, worship of Azathoth in his normal guise seems rare. The only true earthly cult was that of the Nokans, but isolated madmen have served him more recently. Azathoth also has a large following among the Shan, whose temples hold an image of his avatar, Jadahingla. The rites of the Shan perform for Azathoth are wholly abominable. The utterance of Azathoth's name gives one great power over beings from outside, and his unknown secret name gives even more influence and may permanently damage one who hears it. This respect has its limits, though, and not even the Necronomicon contains Azathoth's secret name.
So, I listen, read, ingest huge amounts of horror.
Yeah, you do.
You know what I use for a palate cleanser for that?
Not Fallout. What do you do? What do you use?
No, what I use for a palate cleanser for that is Beverly Cleary novels on Audible.
Yeah, the Ribsy novels and the Beezus and Ramona novels. Really fun.
Yeah, very fun, very fun. Mm-hmm. The Henry Higgins ones are read by Neil Patrick Harris.
Mostly, yeah.
And the Beezus and Ramona books are read by
Stocker Channing. Yeah, she does an amazing job. And she reads all of the Ramona and Beezus books.
Yes.
Really good.
Yeah, yeah. So I listen to them. And cool thing about Audible is you get one book credit each month.
Yeah.
And what is it, like $15?
For $15 a month.
Yeah. So if you go to audibletrial.com/PGTTCM, you'll get a free book.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like $15 a month, and you get to choose your book.
Yeah.
And those credits stack up, so if you don't use it, you don't lose it.
It's true. They also sometimes offer a deal where you can buy 3 credits.
Yeah.
For like $36, making each credit about $11. And then you get like, you can buy, I've done this several times myself, bought a book that was listed for $45 for one credit. And it's a much better way to listen to all of the Brandon Sanderson that I want to.
I don't know who that is.
He's a science fiction fantasy writer.
And it's not just science fiction fantasy.
Nope.
It's not just kids' books.
Nope.
They've got smut, right?
Oh, man, so much smut. They've got a whole thing that you can, like, belong to the romance package. And then you can
package.
Yeah, romance package. And then you can listen to all the smut you want for free.
Wow.
Which is nice because a lot of smut is like, you know, you listen to it for 2 hours and then it's over.
Yeah.
And you don't want to pay $11 for that or one credit for that matter.
So do they have other packages?
Not that I know of, which is really too bad because I would love them to have a science fiction package.
Yeah.
Or a horror package would be
Ooh.
Great. You know, like just listen to all of the stuff, like all of the, I don't know, Isaac Asimov that I missed, or, you know, that's not horror, but, you know, or Stephen King.
Quick question. I was going through your Audible list earlier today.
Yes.
And you had The Great Courses on there?
Yes.
Not that this is an ad for The Great Courses,
no,
but you can get
The Great
Courses
is on
Audible
as well. Yeah. And also, you can listen to podcasts and other audio shows on Audible. Like, there's all sorts of stuff, like radio plays.
Huh. I do know that they have all kinds of different readings of The Call of Cthulhu and other stories of H.P. Lovecraft on there. But, yeah. Cool. Well, hey, everyone. That was a really long ad for Audible. But check out audibletrial.com, PGTTCM.
It's a really great, and it's streaming, so you can get it on all of your devices. You can stream it on your phone and then pick it up right wherever you pause it on your computer. It's really awesome.
Yeah, and as John DiMaggio says, Audible when you don't feel like reading.
Indeed. All right, so that's Azathoth.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on Azathoth?
It's an interesting concept having, like, I mean, elder races.
Yeah.
People, like, greater deities. Humans are but a speck in the universe.
Sure.
Of course, it's always, like, an interesting thing, but it seems like Azathoth, and I know that you started this episode with Azathoth because it is sort of the idea in the mythos is that it's the primal mover, the primal maker. And of course, one of the things about when you nudge a speck of dust is you never know what's the ultimate windstorm that's going to happen, right?
Sure.
So, like, that's what I think is, I think that Azathoth is like that butterfly.
Oh, you think, like, okay, like, Azathoth.
Because it also is called an idiot god.
Uh-huh.
And that means that probably there's no, like, idea or motivation behind what's going on. What do you think about that?
So, are you saying Azathoth is the god of cause and effect?
I would say that Azathoth, as the primal motivator, is the one who started everything but has no control over where it's ending.
Gotcha. Okay, so my concept of Azathoth is Azathoth. Okay, the Milky Way galaxy is a four to three, depending on where you're at,
right?
Is a four to three dimensional shadow of Azathoth, as we've discussed at other points in time. Like a five-dimensional
object has a four-dimensional shadow, yes.
And a four-dimensional object has a three-dimensional shadow. Mm-hmm. A three-dimensional object
has
a
two-dimensional shadow,
et cetera, in both directions, infinium. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, but this is like, of course, like just mathematically posited. It's not actually something that we can't conceive of, like five-dimensionally objects.
It's science fiction.
Yes, that's right. So we can do whatever we want.
We can do whatever the fuck we want. I got to make sure I got at least one fuck in there so we get that right? E.
You got to get that E. Got to get that E.
All right. So so yeah, I posit that Azathoth is a multidimensional creature the size mm-hmm. of at least the size of the Milky Way galaxy that we all inhabit.
Well, and like,
larger mythos creatures are just somehow stuck between dimensions.
When we cast a shadow, our shadow isn't dependent on the size of our shadow isn't dependent on the size of the object casting it. It's dependent on the angle of the light. So like a very small person can cast a really big shadow and a really big person can cast a really small shadow depending on where the light is.
Okay.
So who knows how big Azathoth is?
And I'm also saying shadow in like huge, huge quotes. Quotation marks. All right. Because I don't know how physics works on a galactic scale like that.
Okay.
Especially in a, I don't know, science fiction universe that I did not create.
Right. Well, I mean.
But it's open source, so I can interject all the stuff I want.
Change it how you want. Yeah. So, I mean, it would be a really interesting thing. I would love to hear if people think that Azathoth is the same size as the Milky Way, if your theory is where we're going to run with, or if it's smaller or bigger. And also, like, the nucleus of chaos, mm-hmm. like, what would ultimate chaos look like? Is it purple?
So something I do want to talk about, though, mm-hmm. is, like, what they say, like, Keziah Mason talking about Azathoth. How does Keziah Mason know anything about Azathoth? Keziah Mason's read some books written in Old English. Maybe she speaks some Greek. Maybe she speaks some...
Isn't she a timeless witch?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Look, it's one of the few strong female characters in a Lovecraftian story, and I just want to celebrate her for a minute, okay?
All right. Okay, we can celebrate her for a minute, but then we have to be like, okay, so is she timeless, or does she just step outside of time?
Oh, like, maybe she was in the 1600s, and then she was like, out of here.
Yeah.
I'm back into the early 1900s, and she's like, hey, dude.
She talks about Azathoth, and it's like, go to the court of Azathoth, they're gonna do all this stuff, and it's like,
I don't know, I don't think that somebody who would step outside of time and then skip centuries would be all that smart in the new world.
Yeah,
there's a lot of changes that happen, so I say timeless, not just outside of time.
But yeah, no there's some stuff going on with Azathoth mm-hmm. that where people are like, oh, and some have reported that they channeled him physically, or, you know, as an avatar of Azathoth. And it's like, how do we know it's not an avatar of someone else who's just like being like, oh yeah, I'm Azathoth, you guys, that's a name, you know, right? It's like, or like humans summon it and they're like, oh that's Azathoth, and they're like, yeah I'm Azathoth, what do you want?
Right My favorite one here is that Edward Pickman Derby wrote a book called Azathoth and Other Horrors, because I love that it's like, he's a professor, right? So he's a poet?
Poet.
Yeah. But if he was a professor, his paper would be called Azathoth and Other Horrors, a breakdown of, like, you know, the ultimate myth cycle. The nuclear chaos in our lives.
Yeah.
I like it. It's just such a, I don't know, academic name.
I don't know. There's so much stuff about Derby, Edward Pickman Derby, that that's just like, oh man, I feel like there's elements of the Lovecraft fan base that is just like, I want to be Edward Pickman Derby, and you can be my Azathoth. I'm going to write poetry. I'm going to go to the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and dress all in black.
Isn't Edward Pickman Derby the one who's telling the story?
No, that's his friend Dan.
Oh, right.
The cool guy.
The cool guy. I want to be the cool guy.
The cool guy named Dan.
I want to be the cool guy named Dan.
Yeah, no. I think Pickman Derby's last words in that were glub glub.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Poor kid indeed.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Another Lovecraft story with a strong female in it.
It's true, although arguably not actually female, seeing as how she was the female body, this femally sexed body was inhabited by who knows what kind of ancient evil.
Kamog.
Kamog, the ancient wizard.
Whoa.
Hello there. My name is Maxwell Gold, and I am very excited to be able to do this podcast. So I guess I'm just going to dive right into it. So just a little bit about me. So my name is Maxwell Gold, and I rule my background in regards to weird fiction and the Cthulhu mythos. I'm a writer of short stories and prose poetry, and I've been writing for really since about 2017, toward the end of 2017, met Derek Hussey and Hippocampus Press. It actually all has to do with the musical, but I write short stories and prose poetry, and so I've been published in several journals, including The Audience Void, Weird Book Magazine, as well as a couple others. So, but really, my introduction into the community, the weird fiction community, really came from working on this musical. So I'm currently at the piano, so if you hear my fingers banging on the keys, that's kind of, I really started working on this musical about H.P. Lovecraft, and we're here today to talk about Azazoth. So Azazoth does, of course, play a huge role in this show, and that's kind of how I got into this world, into this community of writing. I've always been a writer ever since I was younger. So I guess I'll just dive right into the show. So the working title of the show is I Am Providence, the Lovecraft musical. Really just talking about Lovecraft's life, and really it's the life and times of H.P. Lovecraft, talking about who he was, sort of the struggle that he goes on his entire life, really trying to do all of these things to become a writer. Well, not become a writer, because he does, but to become a writer that's remembered, we'll say. So, as a composer, there are some liberties I'm taking. It's not going to be exactly like Lovecraft's life, because for all intents and purposes, Lovecraft did have a somewhat boring life, and so putting it to stage, there are some challenges. So it really focuses around Lovecraft, Sonya, Randolph Carter, and Azazoth, as well as some of the other people in his life, but it mostly focuses around Lovecraft's life from beginning to end, really the beginning of his writing career to the end of his life, with little parts of Act One talking about his, what shaped him, his being haunted by night gaunts as a child, his maternal grandfather, how that shaped him. So a lot of that stuff. I guess since this is the Azazoth episode, and this is his one of them, and since that is the main focus, one of the really main characters in the show is Azazoth. What we have here in this show about Azazoth is Azazoth is a female. Because I really wanted to infuse that element of weirdness in the show, because, it's Lovecraft. You can't have a Lovecraft musical without some sort of modicum of insanity or some little bit of his creations in there. So what I was struggling with was, how am I going to personify, the blind idiot god of chaos on stage? So it was a little more abstract. Basically, what you have is sort of, for those out there who are familiar with theater or some of the current shows that have been on for the past, probably say 5 or 6 years, the revival of Pippin, they're sort of a lead player, if you will, and that's sort of what I modeled this version of Azazoth on. You have a character that's sort of can be anything, and it is a she, and Azazoth she'll be able to be anywhere and everywhere, and I sort of have her in sort of like a unitard. You can almost think of Chicago or something like that. When she is Azazoth, she's a character that Lovecraft falls in love with, because Lovecraft sees her everywhere. He sees Azazoth as this sort of uncertainty in his life that's always there. He was married to Sonya for a couple of years, so, but at the end of his life, not to give away the show, but at the end of his life, the only person is there is Azazoth. So it's sort of this little bit of a love story, if you will, but it's Azazoth is one who will always be there for him in a manner of speaking, whether Azazoth is aware of that or not. That's something that I guess we'll have to see as the show develops, because I have been working on the show for the last 4 years, and Sometimes shows develop with a mind of their own, as anyone out there who is a writer who does like to, you know, create stories. You know, your characters tend to develop their own destinies. So you know, I am at the piano, and like the other thing that I struggled with was what does Azazoth sound like? And that's something I always wonder, is what is, when you think of musical theater, what does Azazoth sound like? So I had melodies sort of like so that was sort of like and a lot of the songs were based off of Lovecraft's poetry. So that was sort of like What the Moon Brings, one of my favorite poems of his, but that was, that melody is something that Azazoth does sing. And you have that sort of, you know, creepy but fun aspect to it. It's sort of a waltz, it's a little. So then it goes on, but that's, you know, because Azazoth is the aspect that will always be throughout the show, and, So real quick, what I wanted to do was to sort of show everyone a little bit of one of Azazoth's songs. So this is the prologue. This is the first bit that everyone will essentially see in the show. It will be played by a woman, so I do apologize. I am not a singer, I am a composer, but sort of like a sultry voice, a little more jazzy. But this song was based off of the lyrics for the song were based off of prose poem Azazoth. So there is some irony there, and it is foreshadowing the entire show, essentially. So
when age fell upon the world, and minds of men seemed but bored, when gray cities reached smoky skies, and the shadows grim of ugly sighs, when song and truth
Like I said, I'm more of a composer and a singer, but that is, that's the essential gist of the song. It's that, really what Azazoth is trying to do is just to, you know, essentially foreshadow this, you know, the show, that there will never be another, like him, and the world will forget him. Because the thing you struggle with, how do you make Lovecraft happy? Or how do you, and at the same time, how do you have an entity like Azazoth, who is this unimaginably terrifying creature, stroll up on stage and sing a song that can make. So, I mean, in essence, that is Azazoth, and that is the role Azazoth plays in the show, which I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. You know, the show is essentially done. It's a long process, but I don't want to dive into that today. But, you know, I mean, that's really what I've been, you know, what I've been working on, and that sort of thrusted me into other aspects of the weird fiction community, be it becoming more of a prose writer, working on short stories, which, you know, I have several other pieces that will be published. I was thankful to be able to contribute a short story into a new anthology that is being published by Planet X Publishers, pool of very talented authors that will be a part of it. And, you know, I'm very grateful to, you know, be able to be a part of that project as well. That's kind of where I am right now. I'm kind of I won't say a rookie, but I'm just kind of like starting out, and, you know, compared to a lot of my, very happy to say, you know, colleagues who have been in the community for a long time. I mean, future plans that I have, you know, I would like to keep writing. Obviously, you know, I do have plans to finish the show, and we'll just say it has legs. And I do plan to get it to New York in some way, shape, or form. And I would love to work more in regards to getting a lot of other shows, or a lot of other stories, onto stage. You know, I had this idea for a, and I, and a, it's on paper, but working out the kinks to write a short one-act play of The King in Yellow, a little more modernized. But, you know, things like that. I would like to just incorporate more supernatural horror on the stage. So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, who I am, and a lot of the stuff that I have been working on. And, you know, I hope to come back to you all with some more progress as the show progresses. And so, yeah. So thanks, everyone, and I will definitely keep you, let you know, as Azazoth says, what the moon brings.
Again, one more time, just yes. To let you know that the 5th, 6th, and 7th of October, we're going to be at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival,
in
Portland,
Con.
Oregon, at the Hollywood Theater.
Yay!
Yeah, and also, thank you so much for coming back and joining us for Season 8.
Oh yeah, so exciting.
We're super excited. And also, thanks to Maxine Gold for sending us that audio. We really appreciated it. And did you have anything to interject, Sarah?
Nope.
All right. And on that note, thank you once again for joining us at People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We're always available wherever you download podcasts, pgttcm.com, pgttcm.podbean.com. That's the faucet that the RSS feed comes directly out of. And yeah.
Woo!
Remember to
rate, review, and subscribe.
And also remember to
stay squiggly
and keep it weird.
Woohoo!
All right, thank you. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, back, large and in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Additional music for this episode is by Maxwell Ian Gold. Yay! All other music by Kevin MacLeod. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by Found Autumn Clothing and BunnySlippers.com and whoever else is sponsoring us this week. Look for us everywhere on social media, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. Check out the shops, pgttcm.com. I love you.